hear the word from your people so that we can find ways to make this kingdom palpable in this world. In your precious name we pray, amen.
Amen.
This session is about resurrection and reconstruction in Haiti after the earthquake. I remember I came here one day before the earthquake. And while I was watching TV, you know, I stood there watching, you know, CNN to see what is going on in Haiti. But at the same time, people, you know, it was like people just jumped, you know, from their chairs that let's go to Haiti to do something in Haiti. And it was great because while I was there, I was thinking, you know, trying to call home to know ways to help the church. Even though we didn't have even one dollar in the bank. We didn't have anything. But at the same time, we had the faith that something would happen. And from there, I received many phone calls from all over the United States, especially the ELCA. We tried like 13 years to get the attention of the ELCA, but we didn't get it. But fortunately, and unfortunately that the earthquake happened, and they saw us now in the big picture, and they said that, okay, we are going to help you now. To help us, it's one thing. That is what's happening in Haiti now. Many organizations is there. We have more NGOs per square mile in the entire Western Hemisphere in Haiti. It is the truth. They are all over Haiti. And even, you know, after, you know, we got independent and so many trials in Haiti and people on NGOs, I do not know if you're familiar with Echo Farm. It is like some people, they put themselves together, you know, to find ways to help, to fight hunger in Haiti. Now it is international, but the first time they put this organization together, it was only to help Haiti to fight hunger. That's the life of Haiti. We have more NGOs per square mile. We have, you know, many resources in Haiti. But the biggest problem after the earthquake is how to use these resources, you know, to help people in Haiti. And one of the things that destroys, you know, helping Haiti is to feel pitiful for the Haitian people. Like after the earthquake, what happened? Most organizations, they come to Haiti to say they feel so sorry for the Haitian people. It's like to erect like big tent cities everywhere and to bring food, to bring everything. I do not say that it is wrong right after the earthquake. Because right after the earthquake, we didn't have water, food, we didn't have like nothing at all. We wanted, you know, to have water, dry food, and whatever that can be provided at that time. But at the same time, we have to ask ourselves the question, can we spend our entire life sending rice and beans to Haiti? You know, pack a plane with water and send that plane to Haiti. So if you are going to do that, you're going to pack a plane with water every 10 seconds. And, you know, rice and beans. I remember after the earthquake, I talked with the general secretary of the church. And I was telling him, we going to try to feed the Haitian people, like the communities that we are present as being the Lutheran Church in Haiti, for maybe from 1 to 2 months. Because the money that we spend to feed like 200 families, it's like $40,000 to $45,000 for 2 weeks. It depending on how many kids this family, you know, each family, you know, has. $45,000. But try to imagine that you're going to feed 1 million people and multiply this 45,000, you know, 200, and you're going to feed 1 million people for 2 weeks. Now it's going to be a lot of money. And this money, you know what you do? You eat it and you flush it. It's the truth. You just eat the rice and beans and you just flush it. And it's gone. You're not going to find that $45,000 anymore. That is why we say that it's going to be so expensive. And it's not based upon sustainability too. We're going to talk about that later on Friday. Because if you just keep feeding people, you do not just spend money for the sake of spending money, but at the same time, you create something which is a monster, over-dependency. That is why after the earthquake, I said to the people in Florida that we're going to have a baby boom in Haiti. Because we have all these people under tents, each of them has a tent, and when you sit down without doing nothing at all, you have to find ways to do something. And it is the truth, when you walk down to Haiti, if you young ladies, and it's going to see 7 of them are pregnant. That's it. Because what most of NGOs do is to provide rice and beans, you know, medical stuff, soap, everything that they think that people would need, you know, under the tents to survive. It is good. But at the same time, how are you really helping the Haitian people to get better? That's a question to ask. How are you helping? Because sometimes when we see this structure as being an iceberg, it is the same thing. Like the tip top, you just say, okay, I get rid of it. But at the same time, the humongous part of the iceberg is underneath the sea or the water. It is the same bandit mentality. That is why after one year after the earthquake, when many NGOs, you know, sent the report about how much money they spend during that year, it's a lot of money. So how much is being done? It's only from 5 to 10%. I remember when Bishop Hansen went to Haiti, he spent like less than 24 hours in Haiti. He thought that from the airport, I'm going to tell him that, okay, this is the 10, these are the 10 cities, these are the rubbles, these are, you know, all the very scary part of the earthquake. No, I said to him that, you know, Bishop Hansen, you are here to help us to rise from the rubbles. Because in Haiti, we are people from the resurrection. Can we spend our entire life, put our hands like this to think about rubbles and 10 cities in Haiti? No. When driving from the airport to Carrefour, you would find tons of 10 cities, rubbles all over Haiti. Until now, we have people under rubbles. So talking about rubbles would make a difference? No, because we have them already. But talking about ways to get rid of the rubbles would be something good to do. That is why I never talk about rubbles. I talk about ways for people to be removed from rubbles to new lives. That is why we talk about the whole matter of resurrection. So how can we raise people like Ben? How we can raise people like Ben? Like, we have more than 1 million people died from the earthquake. Even our government are not aware of that. They just say 300,000 people. In Carrefour, as being the president, as being the Lutheran Church, we were the only one to provide food in Carrefour, you know, health care in Carrefour until now. And Carrefour is the epicenter of the earthquake. Where we have the church in Carrefour, 98% of the houses there were completely gone. And at the same time, Carrefour has like at least 3 million people. And, you know, for the government to see that 300,000 people dying, you know, even our own that, right? But it's hard for you to tell your partner that it's not right. You have to turn around the bush. That is why, like, most of the NGOs, they come with a mindset, this is how I'm going to help Haiti. This is what we're going to do in Haiti. But when you do that, you do help. But it still is a bandit mentality. Because they know what's going on. They know the resources of the community. They know what they need, you know, to rise. But at the same time, if you come with a mindset like, okay, this is what I'm going to do, it's going to help. But at the same time, is that going to address the reality people are living to help them to be removed from the rubbles? No.
We need to ask you.
Yeah.
What help do you need from us?
Okay, the first thing that I always tell people, in a relationship, you know, the listening part of it is gold. We need to sit down and that listening, like when I talk, pay attention to me. And when you talk, I'm going to pay attention to you. But most of the time, money is power. I have the money, I'm the leader. That's a problem. And when we see many organizations, when you see their policy, it's just like they were not written for third world countries like Haiti. It is hard to work with other organizations because all their laws are not really centered, you know, to a country like Haiti. For instance, we have organizations, when we talk to them about the church, and the church is the center of life in Haiti. Like, the church, you know, is the center of each community in Haiti. And when I was talking to some of these organizations, it's just like they want to separate the community from the church. And one day I went to a meeting, I couldn't scream, but I spent like even 2 weeks mad. Like, I was very mad because I see that people do not listen, they do not get it. There's a story of some missionaries, they went to Panama and they sat down with the people. They said that, what do you need, you know, from us? And they said that to build us a soccer stadium. And these people, they were so mad to say that, how come, you know, I asked you, what do you need? I think that you're going to say that to enhance agriculture, something, you know, like that, but not to build a soccer stadium. And at the same time, later on, they would discover that this soccer stadium put communities together. Many teams would come from all over Panama to play together. It helped the local people, you know, to have hostel, guest house, to have, you know, to sell their craft stuff. It puts their communities together. Just by listening to them, they build a soccer stadium. And it's at the end, they will discover that this is what was needed in that community to put people together. That's what is going on in Haiti, because most of the NGOs, when they come with their own mindset. And something too that many people are not aware of it, sometimes organizations, they raise money to help Haiti. In that money, they would pay 60 to 70% of that money to 3 expatriates. People from the United States, they send down there to work. And we maybe 30% of that money would remain, and in that 30%, they would hire other people in Haiti, plus they would do the project in that 30%. And at the same time, when you go online, you see that, okay, this organization is doing a $4 million project in Haiti, which is not true. That is why if I am aware of that. Any organization is trying to help the church, and I see that we do not like this idea of expatriates. Like, you're going to pay that expatriate 70% of that money, and at the same time, when you go online, you would just post that you help Haiti with $4 million, $5 million. There are so many problems in that. That is why we do not want people, you know, to use the church, and as being the church, we are ready to say no. That is why the resurrection cannot happen in Haiti without what my friend said, you know, sustainability. Because how can we keep, you know, 1.3 million people under tents to feed them every day? So, and something you have to remember too, we are at the very path of hurricanes in the Caribbean. To have a tent city is not helping. It is not. Because I was talking with some NGOs about, they give these people these bags and they call it a temporary shelter. And that same box, if I eat very well and I blow, it will be gone. Compare my breath to a hurricane. It's to show you that how that's going to be scary. And 1st of June is time for hurricane season in Haiti, in the Caribbean. So it would be a scary thing if we only have a hurricane in Haiti now. That is why resurrection cannot happen with participation. When you have a bunch of people, they sit down every day, you feed them, you're going to have baby boom, the AIDS going to start spreading in Haiti again. You're going to have many other problems. That is why people are under, you know, all these things. Since, you know, January, we knew for a fact that we would have an outbreak of any disease, any type of disease. But unfortunately, we have cholera in Haiti, and you might hear about what's going on in cholera in Haiti now. And at the same time, when all these people live together on a tent city, if one gets it, there's ways for all of them to get it. That is why you cannot have this resurrection without participation. The people, they have to participate in their own development, in their own success. That is why whatever we do, even with the church, if we say that we need new benches, we're going to build the benches. And everybody say, yay, we're going to have new benches. But at the same time, what we do, this is going to be your benches. So let us build it together. Now there's this sense of ownership. There's an example which is clear. Like, you can come here, like many churches, that's what they do. You say that, okay, let us go to Haiti to build a church. They go with everybody, they build it themselves. And the people, it's joy that, okay, we are not working, they're going to build it for us, that's great. But at the same time, if someone comes to break it down, people might say that if they break it down, the people, they're going to come back and build it again. That's the hope. But at the same time, if they spend days, weeks, months to work to build that church, They would say that, oh, no way you're going to build it. I spent 10 days working here. It's not going to be in vain. Now it is ownership. This is my church. I spent time to build it. That is why if you're going to bring something, you know, to resurrect people from rubbles, you do not put their own participation in it, there's no way you're going to succeed. Because this participation gives a sense of ownership. This is my church. This is my school. That is why there's a lot of problems here, like with the United States too, in a way, like people sometimes they earmark money. You know, we want this money to go toward housing. And when it is like that, it is hard even for us as being the church. If we know for a fact that, you know, to help people building these big bucks is not going to help them, so we have two things to do. Take the money, even though we do not believe it's going to help and build this housing, or just say no. But we usually say no to that. That is, when we talk about participation, we have to see it in many ways. That is why when I say reconstruction, we do not reconstruct only like the buildings, or we reconstruct society to put society together. Because since 1804, we have this mentality where like, the mentality is killing us. This mentality is just like, you are nothing, you cannot do anything. That is why most NGOs, when they come with their own professionals, they come with the expertise, and there's no empowerment. There is no way we would survive in Haiti now to help people to rise from rubble without empowerment. Because after the earthquake, what happened? Many doctors, engineers, they come to Haiti to do what? To remove rubble. And at the same time, we have people dying in Haiti. They need, you know, medical assistance. We need to train better masons how to better build housing in Haiti. You know, we need all these, you know, skills within society so that we can survive. But at the same time, sometimes the expertise come, do something, and go. There's something in Africa, some missionaries, they went to Africa, they build wells. But the type of, you know, system that they put with, you know, electricity, that works with electricity, when there's a problem with these wells, there's no way the African people can fix them. Sometimes they have to wait like a year, 2 years, for someone from the United States to come and fix these wells. We do not call that empowerment. If you really want to empower them, even to dig the hole, you have to try to teach them why we do this, why we do that, so that they can, you know, have that skill, because it is not your well. This is theirs. That is why something that comes to that too is like, do you help because you want to feel good about you do something, or you help to empower these people because there's a problem there, we want to solve that problem? That's the question you have to ask yourself. Because if you want to help to satisfy yourself, you just can go and do something. But if you really want to help the people to get better, you know, for the Haitian people to rise from rubble to a new life, you need to do it according to the grassroots of the problems in Haiti. Because most of the time we do not see it like that. Like, for instance, since the Duvalier was gone, they tried to, with the whole matter of deforestation. And many groups, and if you see how much money that has been, you know, spent, you know, to reforest Haiti, every year people went to, you know, go to Haiti to plant like 10 million trees. So what happened after? After 6 months, 8 months, they cut them down again to make charcoal. The problems there, it is not, that is a money that you just flush again down the drain, because they cut it and make charcoal again. Because the problem there is not that Haitian people do not like trees. They love it because they can make charcoal out of it. Yes, they do. But the problem is that they need a new way, an alternative way to cook their food, which would be cheaper than a bag of charcoal. Now, are they going to cut down trees? No. That's what happened to the Dominican Republic. The government, with other organizations, they subsidize on the price of natural gas and propane. Peace be still. Like when you watch Haiti, you know, somewhere like on a plane, when you watch Haiti, it is like this desert without tree. And when you go to Dominican Republic, it's all green. It is such a big difference between when you cross the border from Haiti to Dominican Republic. Two different countries, two different people, two different world. Things are completely different. That is why sometimes when we do something, it's just like when we deal with the bandit mentality, we do even more than we address the problem. That is why for us, when I was gone, when I went back 17 days after the earthquake, 15 days after the earthquake, we sat down with communities because we have to identify what is there. Because like when we go there, we ask people about even what are the resources that they have. The response was that we have nothing. But when we try to name the resources, do you have people? Do you have land and they just started? Yes, we have this. Yes, we have that. And from there to do something that from the very grassroots of the problem, and now we can talk about solving a problem. Like I always give an example of people, like sometimes in the United States, they just choose a child and it's that I'm going to spend money to send that child to school. It's good. At the same time, it might come from a family of 12. You're going to help one to rise from the rubble. And this one, after finish with high school, is going to go to Port-au-Prince. And Port-au-Prince, most of the time, is a stepping stone to the promised land. The United States and Canada. Now, you help one person to escape the reality of Haiti, but you do not help one person try to duplicate their knowledge to help the community, even the country. That is why, being the church, we do things differently. Like, sometimes we have a fund in Florida, Bahama Synod, that if you want to invest some money for schooling in Haiti, you just put that money in that fund. Now we can build a school in that community where all the kids in the community can go to school. We do not exclude people. That is why to rise from to have this resurrection, we have, to find new ways to address the reality of Haiti. Because we cannot address the reality of Haiti from the United States or from a United States point of view. From a Canadian point of view, we have to go to Haiti because to learn from the culture and everything would help you way better. That is why with the church, we have something that we call come and see. You come and sit down with us to learn first. And from there, the Spirit will guide you really how to help us by being with us, not to try to do it for us without our participation. And we have the other aspect is go to tell. Because whenever people come to Haiti, we try to train you so that you can understand what is going on. When you go outside, like go back to your church, your community, you can talk about the reality of Haiti. Because we fall into that a lot, this problem of like, I know better than that. But at the same time, most of them who know better than that, they are working in Haiti now, and Haiti remains the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. And so much has been invested in Haiti. And going back to the reconstruction, it's not, there is no reconstruction without, empowerment. You have to empower people. Because even with the mentality, people have this, over-dependency mentality since, years, organizations keep coming and feel pitiful, let me do this for them. Oh my God, these kids are so cute. It is good, that you can help, but the best way to help is crucial to the development of anything that you can do.
Littleton, why don't you tell these good people about Carfu and the church there right after the earthquake and then, the water situation?
Yeah, like for instance, thank you, Pat. Going back to Haiti, the people didn't have any water in Carfu. And the church is the only presence in Carfu. And what happened? We didn't have the money, and God has blessed us with the money. So how to put the water system? It is an example. How we do it, whatever cannot be provided by the community, we buy it. So who's going to put the water system together? The community. That is why now there's ownership. And we, after the earthquake, like when you watch TV, they show you that the Haitian people, they were fighting for food. They were fighting for water. The reason for that, they didn't have any, interaction with these communities. They just come and just do something without the participation of the people within the community. That is why the participation of the people in whatever you're going to do in Haiti is crucial. Because when we come back, we sit down with the community, we say that whatever we do, we're going to do it for you, with you. So let us put ourselves together as being one community. And we tell them that if there's a cake, you know, you take two pieces, that tells you that someone else is going to sleep tonight hungry just because you took two pieces of the cake. That's why when we come with rice and beans and everything, and I have pictures, but I don't have anybody to help me. Maybe tomorrow I'm going to show it. Everybody just come and take a bag of rice, take a pack of spaghetti, because they know that they are entitled to one. That is why, you know, the participation of the community is crucial. Like everything that we do in Carrefour, in Gracie, wherever, like within our churches, we demand like 100% of the participation of the community. Like in Carrefour, most of the young people, they sit down every day without doing anything.
Can you show us on the map where that is?
Oh, Carrefour is right here.
Yeah, that was the epicenter.
Yes, okay. Of the earthquake. Okay. It's right.
Thank
here.
You. Livingston, can you give us an update on the cholera epidemic and also the church's response to cholera?
And to come with the cholera, there's a problem in Haiti. Sometimes there's two things to do in Haiti. You might go to the community, or you stay in one place, you let the community to come to you. But when we sit down as a church, we say that the greater impact that we can have is to go to the community. Like when we had the cholera outbreak, you know, we have Doctors Without Borders in Haiti. They are helping a great lot to fight the disease in Haiti. But at the same time, the style they use is like the people to come to them instead of them going to the community. But being the church and we work with community, what we do, we go instead to the community. That is why in Carrefour and Gracie, the Lutheran Church is the one to help people, over 100,000 people with the cholera disease. How we do it? We go to the community, take young people within the community, you know, empower them, teach them how to respond to the cholera, how to help people to sanitize the community and everything. We give them like IV 24 hours a day, Clorox 24 hours a day. We teach the community how to be healthy and the hygiene in the community, how to keep it up. Because what we say as being the church, if one person, you know, catches cholera, that person would be the only one to get it within the community. That is why it is quick. Whenever, like one of the, we call them health agents. We have 13 Carrefour. Whenever someone call one of them, because we put banners everywhere with the phone numbers of these health agents. Now, if someone catches it, it's just to call the church. And whenever they call the church, all the 30 health agents would go to that community to take Clorox, you know, to sanitize the entire community to prevent other people to get it. And what happened too, sometimes whenever there's a river, it's the tricky part of it. We saw after, like, we were talking about the cholera, the two problems that we saw is like to have a river and mango season. Whenever it's mango season, there are flies all over. And they are a good agent to carry it from place to place. And the river, sometimes it's a problem because if someone catches it and they wash that person's clothes in that river, it's just going to go and infect, you know, many, many, many communities. That is what happened. Now we are in the mango season in Haiti. Every 10 minutes, we would receive a call that there's someone who catches it. But at the same time, the response is so quick, that's why we are doing very good in responding to the cholera.
Can I just share a story about the church in Sapopi that I was really moved by? And one, we were able to ask a question to a woman named Dr. Marcel, who is part of the Lutheran World Federation staff and is working very closely with Iglesia Terion in training community members in how to be first responders to cholera. And we asked the question, is it true that the UN brought cholera to Haiti because over all these public buildings, they would have UN equals cholera? And we had a chance to say, is that true? And Dr. Marcel said, unfortunately, it is, because everyone who has cholera could be traced back to the same strain that is found in
Nepal.
Nepal.
Nepal. And so essentially there was one UN person from Nepal who was infected, maybe didn't know, and then had some of their waste or something go into the river, and that's where the cholera epidemic started. And then it spread to thousands and thousands of people. So it really was brought by a UN soldier from Nepal.
It's very similar to when Christopher Columbus came and the Europeans got to Haiti. The Haitians at that time, the native, had never been exposed to anything like that. So the disease was just pandemic. And immediately, hundreds of thousands of them just died. And that's what happened with cholera. The Haitians had never seen a case of cholera for at least 100 years.
And we have a problem too. When we had the first outbreak of cholera in Haiti, they said that the voodoo priests were the ones to cast that on the people. And actually, they killed some people in Haiti too. That is why even to be the church is to be a voice, for the voices to say that these people, they were not the one to bring it. And it is hilarious. It is kind of a joke in Haiti. It is a time whenever they see that someone has, it's HIV and AIDS, patient, it is devastated. People would cry, their entire life that they have the disease. And they came with that joke, like someone went to the doctor and they say that, you do not have the cholera. You have the HIV and AIDS, and the person was so happy because he doesn't have the cholera. because the cholera might kill you within like 12 hours or so. That is why, to have AIDS instead of, cholera is the best thing ever. It's just a joke in Haiti now.
How does the government figure into all this?
We have the brightest people to run the country. And, it's a way to say it because, whatever happened in Haiti, we wait for the United States or Canada or another place to respond for us. That is why the government, they just sit down and lay back and let, the United States and other organizations to deal with that.
There was one other thing, too, that I think many of us forget, and that is that during the earthquake, almost every government office was destroyed. So all records were gone. And one of the figures I got was 30% of the government employees were killed. So that way, even though Haiti had a weak infrastructure, now it had no infrastructure.
Does the new president have any effect?
If you ask me, you're just going to get a negative response because I am not too positive about him. Because if for instance you tell me that we have 1.3 million people under tents, you need money to help these people. I don't have a problem with that because we know that we have 1.3 million people under tents. So tell me how you're going to do it. They don't have any how to do it. It's just like, we need money, we need money, we need money. So how are we going to address it? And he's even talking about the problem of, schooling in Haiti, to send everybody to school in Haiti. But at the same time, we have tons of young people. They were done in high school and university. They sit down there without doing nothing. And at the same time, you're going to multiply this number. So are you helping? No, I do not see any positive things, going out of him. But what we do now is, to try to restart the whole matter of the Haitian economy. Because we are an agriculture-based economy. And I see it's sad, though, that Bill Clinton, in being this bridge between the United States and Haiti, the money, the percentage of money that they try to put aside, to help, the agriculture is very, 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 very small. And at the same time, Haiti used to provide coffee, sugar, many stuff to Europe. That is why we had the name of the Pearl of the Caribbean. So the one way you can really help the people is to try to enhance agriculture in Haiti. But at the same time, he doesn't see it. He saw like these industries where they pay you, it used to be less than $1 a day. Now I think that it is $2, the minimum wage, something like that. It's going to be $2. And at the same time, it's not it cannot help families to survive. And at the same time, this is what Clinton see as being a way to help the country, which is...
We're very good people in the United States, and our government has subsidized rice farmers, who then sent their rice to Haiti in great, great, great quantities. And people in Haiti could buy that rice at a price lower than they were paying for rice that was grown in Haiti. But what that did is wiped out all the Haitian rice farmers.
Yes, that's what happened, you know, when they do. And Clinton was the very head of this to how, you know. Because sometimes when you have to sit down to understand it, like I remember I was in Jamaica at the seminary, and we had a food, you know, shortage in Haiti, and people went on the street, you know, to fight because they want food. And what food, you know? Rice and beans, that's it. And I think Taiwan responded to say that we're going to help Haiti. And the way that Taiwan, you know, what's going to help Haiti is by sending rice and beans to Haiti. And I said that it is not helping. And people, you know, even on campus, they said that, you know, that I'm ungrateful because I said that they are not helping. I said that they help at a certain percentage because, you know, if you help by sending rice, so if you reach a time you cannot send rice anymore, what will happen? And that happened really. We had another food riot in Haiti. That is why to really help Haiti now to come to rise from the rubble is to empower people, empower farmers, teach them new ways, you know, based on the skill that is already been there. Because do not come with just like GM food, GM ways to produce food in Haiti. There's no way that going to work. But based on what is there already, try to put your expertise plus their expertise to see that if we can find new ways to help farmers to come out of this. Because there's no way that we can come out of, you know, rubbles without empowerment. Because we're just going back to that empowerment and participation, which is crucial to the development of Haiti. That's why when we go to CARFU, we have many young people. They are not doing anything in CARFU. And other places, when we sat down, like we go to Petit Goave, when we talk to people about the resources that they have, if you know, question like 100 people, like 90 of them, they possess a cow. And at the same time, we import like $50 million every month worth, you know, cheese and milk and yogurt in Haiti. So how can we help these farmers to use the resources that they have? That is why in Petit Goave, we're going to build a dairy. In Lekai, we're going to build a dairy. Because people, they own the cows. And this type of cows, even though it is very hard, they can eat anything at all. That is why to use the resources that they have and now to reduce, you know, the importation of milk and yogurt in Haiti, it's very good. That is why if we go, and tomorrow we'll see many pictures of that, on the major supermarkets in Haiti, you're going to see all their own eggs. You know, that we empower farmers because whatever we do has been, you know, ways to approach the reality of Haiti. We see the agricultural part of it. We have the chicken and the chicken manure. I don't know if I say it well, not to say the chicken poop. It's a way to serve it as fertilizer, you know, so that they can, you know, do it. And to have the dairies, it's a way to enhance agriculture because they need to feed the cows. So we have to plant corn again, to plant, you know, beans again, because you have to address the reality the way you should address it. And from now, I don't have to pay schooling for the people in Petit Goave, because they have this eggs business going on, they have the cheese, milk, and yogurt business going on, and we teach them, because the empowerment, how to take care of your own chicken, how to take care of your own dairy, because it is not the church's dairy. This is the dairy of the community. That is why we have this corporation of all the people who own a cow within the community. We sit down with them, train them the best way to take care of the cows and everything. Now it is owned by them. We know for sure now they have a check coming every month. So now I am not going to say that I'm going to give you dry beans and rice. I'm not going to take one of your kids to send them to school. I know for sure that I empower you enough so that you can do it for yourself. Empowerment. And you give them the sense of, you know, this is my stuff. This is, you know, my eggs, my chicken. And now going to the supermarket in Haiti, you will see the picture. I was so happy. One of the biggest supermarkets in Haiti, they call it Giant. And I went there, I saw our own ads. I was so shocked. And I took the iPod and take pictures, you know, to see that, you know, based on sitting down with people, we can make a difference in the lives of many.
Livingston, I have two questions. One, I don't know if you're able to address this one, but I know the U.S. government promised about $3 billion mm-hmm. in aid after the earthquake and that it was getting held up in Congress. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, one, has the country of Haiti seen any of that money that was promised by the United States? And if so, what might it be being used for? And then my other question is, how can we in this room empower the church in terms of if we wanted to give money, like where would we give it? Mm-hmm. And what are ways that people in this room can practically be involved in the empowerment of the people of Iglesia Presbyterian de Haiti?
First, about the money that is being, you know, set aside to help Haiti. I don't know.
Can I help with this?
Okay.
Can I have a follow-up question on what is the ELCA disaster doing for Haiti?
That's where the apes and all the cattle and all that kind of thing are coming from. There have not been immediate reports in the last 2 or 3 months about aid to Haiti coming from the international community. But what happened is in the trauma of the earthquake, that everybody said, oh, we're going to help, we're going to help, we're going to help. And countries would say, we're going to give you this much money. And another country would say, we're going to give you that much money. And then they go back to their nations, and like our Congress, they say, wait a minute. And so Haiti has not seen even one third of the money that was originally promised immediately after the earthquake. And that's why it's important for the NGOs to step in. The government has never bothered anything that we have done in Haiti. In the 10 years, I have never had one problem with them.
With the government of Haiti, you mean?
Yes,
from the Haitian government. It has been very, very difficult for nations across the world to pay attention to Haiti and fulfill their obligations there when you have problems as you had in China, and in South America, where immediately you've got Haiti here with all its problems, and then immediately you've got other kind of disasters occurring, and then you got another disaster, and there's kind of a short-lived memory about what's happening over here. Now, what were some of your other questions there, Renee?
Disaster.
People have been here.
Okay, what can you do here? I nearly cried one day when I use the internet and read a lot of newspapers. And I nearly cried one day when I heard that one Lutheran congregation had souls for souls. Because it sounds like such a great idea. It's just a great idea. And they gathered together all of these shoes. And the people in the congregation went to church that Sunday barefooted to kind of replicate what they felt was happening in Haiti. And they had these mass, many, many boxes of shoes that they then paid to ship to Haiti. And I don't know how they shipped. I have no idea about that. I just know that sometimes when you ship to Haiti using containers, those containers can sit on the docks for quite some time. Sometimes the shoes and clothing that people take don't fit. I think when you do something like that, you really have to know personally who you're sending it to or who you're taking it to. Because then you see people wandering around with shoes that are too big or shoes that are too small. Haiti has, you can go to practically any corner. You know about that. Practically any corner. Shoes everywhere. And that's what made me want to cry, because by giving, again, it's like the rice. By giving, you're not helping the economy. You're not helping these little people on the street. who are trying to make a few goods so they can go home and feed the family. You're giving them something that makes you feel blessed. And that's one thing we've got to be careful about.
So is anybody listening to sustainability and recovery in that vein?
Yes.
And that's why you're here too, because you want people to know the.
I understand that.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking somebody with power.
Yeah.
NGO, government.
Probably not so much the government, but I know that some of the things that I have been hearing out of Washington, D.C. with Bill Clinton is sustainability. Sustainability. And the same thing with, I understand Bill Gates is working not toward just taking care of the problem right now, but looking toward sustainability. This is a really new term. You know, we're used to going in and doing our little old thing. And then leaving, and then what happens, happens.
So what can we in this room do?
All right, I think there are a couple of things you can do. One is, you can become better acquainted with Haiti. The internet is a wonderful way to get some idea about what's happening in Haiti. I suggest that read. Find out what has happened to Haiti. What's happened in this 200 years since they've had independence? The United States invaded three times and left that nation a little bit poorer each time they left. Within your own congregations, make people aware that the way Haitians live is not the way we live. You can plan trips to Haiti. I am a little hesitant with this because with the situation there now, one of the reasons I have not gone more recently is simply because every time we go, that puts a little pressure on the Haitian community. And although they love us, I get such good hugs. And although they love us, it puts a little pressure on them. And immediately after the earthquake, there was so much that was going on that needed to be taken care of. They didn't need to be taking care of me. Plan trips to Haiti. Think about this whole business of, what is mission really all about? We can talk all we want about grace. We can talk about Christ and what he has done for the world. But it's only by our being there and showing that it really means something. Behavior means a great deal. There are organizations that are doing some marvelous things there. There's ELH. You want to contribute to something that is helping Haiti, I suggest you go back to your synods, set up a budget line for Haiti, and start talking about Haiti.
What is ELH?
Église de Terrien d'Haïti. That's the Lutheran Church in Haiti.
Okay, and that's
Église de Terrien d'Haïti. Set that up within your own synods. Now, with Florida Bahama synods, we've been doing that for 10 years, and we frankly do not have enough people to continue forever. And that's why I'm so glad that Living Synod and the Haitians are able to get to other synods to speak to other people. Other things that you can do is to, after you have gone and while you're there, don't expect to be the person that's got all the answers. One of the churches that they were building there, the Haitians had laid out the footprint. And the footprint was wrong for the kind of land that they had to build the church on. And the Haitians knew that. So when they went back the next morning, the Haitians, God love them, had changed the footprint.
Who laid it out?
Yeah.
Who laid it out?
The Americans. And because had a good engineer. Listen, he had years and years and years of experience here in the United States and building here in the United States. And so the footprint he laid out
was perfect for here, but it was all wrong for Haiti. And so it sits you in a situation where, gee, you've got all this wonderful expertise, but I'm sorry, we as Haitians, we can't use that because the situation is different.
So, Pat, so financially, the synods could give through the Florida Bahamas Synod, right?
Yeah, you could give through the Florida Bahamas Synod, but that puts more pressure on us.
Okay.
And it does not make the issue widespread.
So how do you filter money through? Like, if people want to give to Iglesia Tejon de Haiti to support churches, the churches, and empower the people, where does money get funneled through that we know it will get to Iglesia Tejon de Haiti?
They have their own bank account now.
Okay.
We do wire transfers out of the Synod.
So who would this? And see, I know a lot about this church, and I still don't know how to tell people to give money to Iglesia Tejon de Haiti. Can you tell me, like, this is the first step. This is what you get through.
Okay, first step is within your own congregations. No, first of all, synod congregations. Within each of your congregations, set up a line item for Haiti. Do not, under any circumstances, designate it for a specific purpose, because that makes it much more difficult to use. Then arrange with your synods to have a line item for Haiti. The money from the congregations then, you do your monthly transfers up to your synod, or yeah, up to your synod offices. That gets deposited in their account. They can make arrangements with Livingston to get the bank numbers and to do wire transfers. You know, it's
say
really
that last part again.
But what if you...
After we give to the synod, say the next part.
Oh, after you give to the synod, then the synod sets up, if you can convince them, they set up an account for Haiti.
And then from there.
And then by contacting Livingston, you can get the bank account numbers and just do wire transfers from your synod to Eglise Lutheran IP. I also suggest that you...
May I respond? I just want to ask, out of my 16 years as a bishop in the church, but my understanding has always been that we send to our companions were Ethiopia and Peru, and Ethiopia is the poorest country in the world, and we were taught to do it through Global Mission. So I'm a little bit confused by this direct to the church, and if we ever did do something directly to the synod, we did it with if it was a couple $100, it was different. But if it was something serious, we at least then copied to church-wide, so that we were always being transparent.
Sometimes there's a problem in that. The problem in that is that sometimes you can send it to Global Mission, and when you send it to Global Mission, depending on where they send that money, we might not use it if we want to do something in the church.
Now,
instance,
if you want to do directly for Iglesia Lutheran Daiti, my recommendation is do it through the Synod. If you want to do a general recovery, reconstruction in a very general terms, that's when it goes to Global Mission. Because Global Mission cannot really specifically use their dollars for church building.
Where does the ELCA disaster fund fit into this whole thing?
Okay, that's where the chickens and eggs and
because this money, it is to be used for community-centered activities, not churches-centered activities. That is why there is a tricky part of it. We might send the money to empower the church itself, and at the same time, we cannot use that money if you send it to the Global Mission. That's the tricky part of it.
But the beautiful thing is that what ELCA is doing in terms of reconstructing the communities is at the same time having the other effect of building the church
because the church is part of that community.
Pat, I just want to second the point about donating to organizations that have long-standing histories of excellence, such as St. Joseph Family.
Yes.
These organizations are often supported by U.S. nonprofits, such as Hearts of Haiti, which is a 501c3, which exists only for the cause of supporting St. Joseph Family. And so donors can receive a tax benefit, a tax incentive, by donating to those 501c3s, which then support directly causes. And there are many causes.
That's a very, very good point. There are other Lutheran groups that are working in Haiti. Hearts for Haiti is one, the Timun Foundation is another, and all of them are 501c3s, as your synod is. And they're worth helping. Peter.
I'm a little confused about the role of Lutheran World Relief. I raised that issue once before, and one of the reasons I'm continuing to raise this because I have applications in my briefcase to give to people to make a contribution to improving the water situation in Haiti, the Lutheran World Relief. I also have a little brochure on that. But that's an example that we've got Lutheran World Federation, we've got Lutheran World Relief, we've got Global Missions, we've got lots of channels, and I'm often worried about the consistency involved.
Okay, let me try a little bit here because I get really confused about this too. Okay, ELH, Eglise Luterienne d'Haïti, is the church, 14 congregations, headed by Livingston Lavons. They have their own account, they have their own offices. Then comes Lutheran World Federation, right now with funds from ELCA, for the general reconstruction, rebuilding of Haitian communities. They work with Lutheran World Federation. As well as they work with a group called ACT, Churches Acting Together. And so their part is separate from what we're doing. It may affect what we're doing. Contributions going to World Relief may come to people in ELH, or it may not. It may again be, again, the church is here, Haitian church is here, and the community development stuff is over here with other groups like ELCA, Lutheran World Federation, and World Relief. So there, there can be some assistance going directly to the church. It may or may not.
The other thing what I remember as kind of the central point of our companion relationships across the church is that we give and receive, and that we first of all and always pray for each other.
That's what we talked about yesterday. I think when we enter into partnership with someone, it is not like other NGO. It's about money. It's about relationship. That is why we have something in the church by the name of come and see and go to tell. Because the best part of us being into relationship with you is to learn from each other so that I can be an advocate for you, you can be an advocate for us. Money can come later. That is what we do. Like, for instance, sometimes the church in Jacmel, they take a time to pray for the church in the Florida Bahamas Synod or maybe Denver now. That's how we do. And we just keep, track of whatever each other do. And something today is participation in the relationship. If I'm going to do something, for instance, I said to the Haiti task force that I sent a letter to say that we need a car. So do we need a car No. We need a car for this and that. That is why whatever we do, we are in a constant, conversation. And the part of it is just like we reach a part, that everything that we do is based upon sustainability. If you give me the car, how that car can help us to sustain something that we are doing as being the church presence in Haiti and within the community in that.
Before we expand on that, you've got a lady up there.
It sounds like one key is training local Haitian community leaders and community development. Is there an avenue to do that through PICO or something?
Excellent question!
That's just jumping out at me is that should be a real key.
That's exactly what's happening, is that the four pastors now and some of the deacons are being trained to be community developers.
And that's key.
And that's why, you know, I'm so glad that we were able to get a foundation together with pastors ordained and communities together before the earthquake. Because that gave then an opportunity to go directly to somebody who could be of service. Mm-hmm. And so that's just a marvelous, marvelous.
And something too, we
will.
No, we welcome other talents because we have a big vocational center in Gracier where we're going to be like 9 colleges, each of them going to take at least 6 people, like to share the talents, like people from the United States, like if you are a Mason, you can come to train people in the communities. Now we have this headquarter for that, not only training for pastors, deacons, but training for any other skill that is needed within our society and within our community. That is why most of the time when we have trips to go to Haiti, sometimes we might require a special skill, like if it is needed, like carpenters now. We need people to train our carpenters in Haiti, young people, because while I was talking in Kof, we have many young people, they are not doing anything. And now we have a vocational center where 40 of them is being trained right now. And we need like the skills like carpentry so that they can learn better how to build with wood, with timber.
But the first ones that are being trained in community development are the